City Talk Breakfast. The kickoff with Steve Hothersall.
Radio City Talk.
Right, about 3-4 weeks ago, I had a lovely lady called Raganhild Lund Asnes who came in and talked about her brand new book, Liverpool Captains. Well, we barely touched on it, so I invited her back to do a little bit more. Morning
so
to you, Raganhild.
Good morning. Thank you for inviting me back.
We touched on a couple of different figures last time, and I was sort of refreshing myself on a few of the best stories that revolve around captaincies. And one of the things that really struck me is sort of the changing hands of captaincy. And I think this came to the fore a bit when we had Sammy Hoopier on the Legends last week, and he was talking about what an honour it was to be captain, but the difficulty in maybe losing that captaincy to someone else within the dressing room. And of course, at the time, it was Steven Gerrard. Well, now we can talk about it, and he can talk about it easily. And at the time, he said, even then, he said, I knew, you know, that he should be the captain. But it's not always the case, is it? So I was looking through how the armband has been passed through the ages. Now, Tommy Smith, who's not very well at the moment, and Emlyn Hughes, of course, who's not with us anymore. But of course, there was two who there was an issue that existed between the passing of the captaincy. So let's look at some of the figures and how the captaincy has been passed and how it affected the individual. So if we go back to Tommy and Emlyn, and clearly they're not in the book in the same way.
Tommy is because I've interviewed him before on an earlier book project, and I sat down with him this time together with his best friend Chris Lawler and his daughter Jeanette, and also I had to use a little bit of his old autobiography to help. But obviously that was such a painful process for Tommy. I think there's something about being a local lad as well and losing the captaincy while you're still on the team. Because Phil Thompson had the same. It was so hard for him to lose the captaincy.
To Graeme Souness.
And
it was publicly known, wasn't it, that there was an issue there and had been for many years.
Yeah, but both times it was just brilliant leadership from the manager, because the manager saw in both occasions and in Sammy's occasion in modern time that they were dropping their performances. They were taking on too much responsibility, and that's the fine balance of being a captain and being a leader. Sometimes you just take on too much. Like with Phil Thompson, he was taking on so much outside of the pitch as well. He wanted to get the same sponsorship deals for all the players that he was offered. He wanted all the same rights. And if somebody wasn't feeling well, he felt like he had to sort it out. If the team was performing poorly, Phil Thompson would blame it on himself. Mm. He would go after the game and say, oh, you know, I should have covered up there. It was my fault. I should have been deeper there, etc. So in all those occasions, the manager saw that, okay, we need to take off the captaincy from these players because they're taking on too much and it's actually making their performances poorer. And in all those occasions, those three occasions, the team played better again and the ex-captains picked up their performance again. So it's brilliant leadership.
It's not just about having the captaincy. It's about how you hold on to it, develop yourself, and how you make sure you do the right things that go around it.
And somebody can take the pressure, some can't, and some can take it. But after a while, responsibility grows so much on you and it weighs you down. So, for example, like the likes of Graeme Souness, he didn't care. He couldn't feel any extra weight on his shoulders whatsoever.
And he's quite at odds with Tomo in perhaps what the captaincy meant to him as well. That's what it reads like within the book.
Oh, yeah. I think, you know, for the likes of Tommy Smith and Phil Thompson, remember, they've just been Liverpool supporters all their lives. So they had been growing up with the club. They had been on Anfield since they were little kids. And then, you know, to see captains lifting trophies after trophies and standing there as a little boy thinking, that should be me one day, lifting that trophy on behalf of this amazing football club in my hometown. So obviously it brings that extra touch of being a captain when you are local, like the likes of Steven Gerrard.
You did something with Phil Thompson last week, didn't you, where you were talking to an audience about what it is the captaincy means and leadership, etc. I'm sure he told the story, didn't he, about being given the armband the first time, and it's a nice story, so you convey it again. This was when he was only told, what, an hour before, wasn't it? And he was getting ready to go out and his family were there, but of course he didn't have time to go and tell them.
No mobile phones at that time. And that's brilliant leadership by Bob Paisley again, you know. He never wanted to put extra pressure on players when they were having their debut, and the same with Thompson being the captain for the first time. And also it just shows that story about the banter in the dressing room. They had so much fun, they had so many laughs, and that togetherness and that fun made them perform so much better too. So Phil Thompson just couldn't wait to get out there to the cup and wave in front of his brothers and show the world that, hey, I'm the captain now, whoopah. But he couldn't get all the other boys on. You know, that time you just ran out on the pitch when you were ready a few minutes before kickoff. Did a little bit of warming up in front of the cup and then the game was on. So eventually the boys said, okay, let's go out there. But they all stood in the tunnel and they let just Phil run out on his own.
He thought they were behind
him.
Oh,
yeah.
And they weren't.
So he was the only player on the pitch and people just laughed all around him. It was amazing.
The Kickoff with Steve Hothersall on Radio City Talk.
My special guest, author of Liverpool Captains, is Ragnhild Lund Asnæs. And we've got some audio from a couple of the captains that you interviewed. So with each of the stories you've done, you've obviously interviewed these players and recorded them so you can go back to it, look over it, you know, find out which bits stand out the most. Let's start with Paul Linson, just preempt it before. Do you think Paul in any way has been sort of tarnished by, you know, the move between the two clubs, the Manchester United, Liverpool, the connection with the both? Is he taken in by either sets of fans or clubs? Does he have the recognition that he should have or not?
I think different people will have different answers to that, but probably in the big scale, no. I think because he played for Liverpool after, his amazing standing in Manchester United is maybe a little lower, and vice versa, because he has been such a massive Manchester United player, Liverpool fans find him a bit sort of...
Well, it's not like a big hero, isn't it? Yeah,
but he is. Oh, yeah. And that's the trouble. You know, look at Michael Owen, the same, you know. It's just too many emotions. But then again, I think it's lovely how Paul Ince is saying in my book, he's saying, you know, thank you, Liverpool fans, for embracing me and welcoming me when nobody else would. That's what he said after he returned from Italy. And as he said, you know, Liverpool was the only team he wanted to come to. And he had so many friends from the England team here with Redknapp and Fowler. And so to him, it felt really natural to come to Liverpool when he was returning from Italy to England.
From Inter Milan. Wait, was it an obvious decision to make him captain or not? Did he feel it was obvious himself to be a Liverpool captain?
He's always been such a big leader character. All his life, he's been in charge, basically. Even back in the street when he was fighting, he was the leader of the pack. And for Roy Evans, he has told me that he needed a change. He had so many young players in the team. He had so much good quality in the team. But he felt he needed a strong leader who could pull that team in the right direction. So for Roy, he said that he bought Paul Ince because he needed that new change of captaincy. That big, strong leader and the experience. But unfortunately, I guess, for Paul, he came into Liverpool a little too late in his career because he was such a brilliant, brilliant player in a few years earlier.
Well, we've got the clip where Paul's talking about not just captaincy of Liverpool, but also England, which was obviously very important to him. You mentioned about if you have dreams and you pursue them, you can achieve it. So Paul is talking here about having the armband for his country as well.
The pleasing thing about... And I've never said this to anybody before, all right, is that when I was England captain, okay, I must have got to about 600 mil from people, okay? And a lot of them weren't just the fact that, a lot of them were, well, some of them were black, some of them were white, some of them were Asian. And a lot of the letters were not the fact that I was blatting the captain, but what I've had to, my childhood, and where I've got to. So from where my dad left when I was two to what I've had to survive, to now being captain of your country, that was an inspiration. Some of the letters were about kids in the ghetto, your mums and dad have written to me. You know, some of them were about Asian people who want to get into football and start playing football. You know, some of them about white kids whose mum and dad are divorced, and you know, they see him as an inspiration. So it wasn't just about the colour to me. It was the effect to me, more than anything, that it had on people. And maybe the fact that I was the first black in the captain made them take up notice.
That's remarkable to hear him talk in such a candid nature. I don't think I've ever heard Paul talk about himself in that. I've heard him do, you know, stuff on BT Sport where he's just analysing a game, but talking about himself there, and it's quite heartfelt, isn't it?
Oh yeah, you know, the hairs on my arms stood up for 4 hours while he talked. He shared his life story for the very first time in the Liverpool captain's book, and I feel so honoured for the trust that he gave me and told me the full story. And I do believe that his story will inspire a lot of more people now, as you hear he did back in the days when he was captaining England. It's amazing.
That issue he talks about there about race and being a black player to captain country or club, how much was that an important part to him? How much now, when you're in the sit-down conversation, I mean, you could hear it then, he's talking passionately, but was that a central focus on what you were talking about?
Oh, yeah, because I think for him to go through such a massive journey of his life, being on his own as a child and then having all that trust and becoming such a massive leader was so important to him. I think it was more important than most people because, you know, he could prove for himself that he managed to pull himself through life more or less on his own. And, you know, there are some heartbreaking stories in his childhood. His mom used to send some money to him every now and then because she was working in Germany and she only took the youngest daughter with her to Germany. And you can think about the Eastern Europeans now, how they do the same. They go somewhere to try to make a living. So Paul didn't have shoes, proper football shoes. They were full of holes, his boots. So he would actually made himself sent off in one game with a red card so he could go into the away dressing room and steal a pair of boots because his boots were that bad. So that's just, it's just one of those, a picture of what he had to go through and then to make the achievements he did, becoming the captain. It says itself. It must have been so amazing and such a thrilling experience.
Remarkable story. And that's one of the chapters. If you're going to buy this book, that's a fascinating piece of it. Let's talk Stephen Gerrard. We didn't talk too much about him last time. Here's the final chapter. He's perhaps the most relevant and important in many ways. How did you feel sitting down with Stephen to talk specifically captaincy? Is he, the in your head, the ultimate captain?
Oh yeah. You know, how he has pulled the team through almost on his own so many times in vital games. Being a captain for 12 years in modern football, that's an achievement in itself. Captaining Liverpool Football Club for 470 games, that pressure, you can't really understand and get a grip of what he's been going through and what he's been sacrificing for his club. And not only on the pitch, I wasn't aware of how much he's been doing off the pitch, how he's been, especially in the recent years, how he's been calling potential signings, how he's been looking after the young players, etc., etc. So Stephen has really, really worked hard in the scenes of Liverpool Football Club as well as on the pitch. And that's a side of him I wasn't aware of.
Perhaps what's fascinating is we talked about brilliant players like Tommy Smith or Tomo, who you knew when the time was up as captain, or Phil Neal. Or there's plenty in the list, but Stephen's captaincy just ran and ran. There was clearly no need. He'd obviously embraced that role as much as being the player, and both fitted perfectly.
Yeah, and he was so brave too, taking it on that young as well. And I think Sami Hyypiä, we started talking about him. I think he did something really, really nice. The first day after the news broke that Stephen was taking over his armband, Sami was a big enough man to go up to Stephen in Melwood and say, "Listen, congratulations. I just want you to know I'm here to support you and help you whenever you need me. Good luck." And that was such an important gesture for Stephen to take on the armband, because he then felt he wasn't hurting his feelings too much, even though Sami was hurting silently. He was big enough to pass on that trust. And that's just telling us, you know, the magic of Liverpool Football Club. I know I sound like a minister here, but that's probably one of the things I've taken from working so close to Liverpool Football Club for the last 8 years. That family feeling, you know, how you pass things on. You pass on success, you pass on experience, you pass on the armband. And it's a beautiful club to write books for.
I'm talking of family, and that's a perfect link into the clip we've got with Steven Gerrard, because family's massive to him, his daughters. Is it three daughters he's got?
Yes.
I think it is, isn't it? They're huge to him.
He's got a fourth underway.
Well, there you go. Four girls. Goodness me, that's trouble. This is Steven talking about the effects on the family and his daughters, really.
I think the values at Liverpool Football Club, one of the biggest values that they drill into you from a very young age is respect. And it's one of the values that I've tried to put into my daughters from a young age, you know. They're lucky where, you know, the dad is financially sound and everything's fine for them, but I don't want to spoil them. I don't want them to be spoiled kids. So I'm very strong and very firm on them having respect for other people.
And that's really interesting, because he's obviously been brought up with those values from within the football. You want to know your football club is treating your players in a way in which they do value everything that they've got around them. It isn't just about £50,000, £100,000 a week. And it's about having proper sort of moral values for the community you represent, the job which you do.
I know. And that little clip of Steven Gerrard is just so impressive, because he just pins the core of the club, respect, you know, all the way down to the Shankly days, where you had to treat the tea lady and the cleaners with as much respect as the manager. It's beautiful.
What was it, or what were you finding in this book about Steven that really impressed you the most? Was there something he said to you that really stuck out about his time as a captain? Was there ever a moment where he doubted himself as a captain? Or
I'm trying to think. With Steven, it was such an emotional time. I interviewed him right after he left the club, before he went to America. So we got to sit down, and what to say about that? I think what he told me about all the work he did behind the scenes, and also how much Jamie Redknapp and Robbie Fowler meant to him, how they looked after him when he was growing up, and how much he learned from that, and that probably shaped his whole captaincy, really. So I think that responsibility you take on as a senior player, and the care, and to see every player in the team, how he got treated like that from his big heroes, Redknapp and Fowler, is probably one of those inspirational things you can take with you from that.
Perhaps finally, the other interesting thing is the dynamic with the manager, because Houllier, who put him in there, was an arm around the shoulder for him and almost the father figure. Benitez, who he massively admires, and even recently has said he is the best manager I've worked under tactically, was a more removed sort of character, tactical genius, but certainly not someone who was going to be the comforting figure if things were ever going wrong.
No.
Very, very different characters. How did Steven reflect on that?
That he was hard work. In the beginning, he didn't really get him. Because Rafa is one of those where you can do 10 brilliant things, but he will pick on the 11th thing that you didn't do that brilliantly. And mentally, that's a hard thing to deal with if you're not used to it. And if you come from a culture where you get your arm put around you when you need that sort of support. And Rafa was quite tough on them. But Steven looks back on it now and says that he learned so much from Rafa. But there was a period where he was really struggling with that sort of communication.
Right, if you want more on this, it's in the Liverpool Captain's book. It's a cracking Christmas gift. Are you doing any more promotion this month for it?
You know, everybody's so welcome to Novotel on Friday, December the 9th. We're doing a Captain's Night with Ronnie Whelan.
Oh,
he's
look
got some
at you.
Amazing
reeling another
stories.
One out.
So please come along to the Novotel. They sell tickets there. Right. It's going to be a fantastic night.
Yeah, Ronnie's a class act, isn't he? So the Novotel, get in touch there. You can, what, you just turn up at reception to get a ticket?
You can just buy it in the reception.
Super stuff. Raganhill, absolutely superb. I'll get you back in. We'll just talk about general football next month.
Oh, wouldn't that be great? The youth, the bright future with the youth.
It's all good at the moment. Lovely to see you. Thank you very much indeed.
The kickoff on Radio City Talk. Your one stop for Merseyside sport.
This is Radio City Talk.